Yeah, well, thanks to the organizers for putting together this nice event that I'm enjoying a lot. Okay, so my plan is to talk about derivation of the following law. It is impossible to cool a system to absolute zero in finite time. This is more or less the unattainability principle that was proposed by Nernst, and that is one of the many versions of the third law of thermodynamics. And yeah, I just want to say that there have been many many versions of the third law of thermodynamics, not equivalent among them, and there was a discussion already in the beginning of the century. And okay, so now, okay. So one of these formulations of the third law is the Nernst heat theorem, which some people write it like this. The entropy of a system, this is the temperature, this is some external parameter, so in modern language it would be some way to modify the Hamiltonian, okay, some parameter of the Hamiltonian, and these are two values of this parameter. This tends to zero when the temperature tends to zero, okay? So in modern language I would say that this means that the degeneracy of the ground state does not change when I change some external parameters of the Hamiltonian. And also again, in modern language, I would say that this is true unless we cross a quantum phase transition. Another formulation also by Nernst of the third law is the unattainability principle that literally was any thermodynamic process cannot reach the temperature of absolute zero by a finite number of steps and within a finite time. Okay, and he has a little argument that appears in many textbooks and in Wikipedia, and that shows, in some sense, the equivalence of the two formulations of the third law. Okay, now I really... Yeah, so Nernst's argument says that here we have what I tried to express there. Sorry, this is a violation of this. So when temperature goes to zero, these curves are curves for different values of the external parameter that we can control. Okay, and in this case, as you go to the temperature to the zero temperature with this fixed value of x, the entropy is different for the two values of x. Okay, so you have a violation of that. And here it satisfies this statement, okay? As we go to zero temperature, the entropy is independent of the value of the external parameter. Now, here you can reach absolute zero by a finite number of isotherms and adiabats. And here you need infinitely many. Okay, so he somehow proves in some sense the equivalence of these two statements. But I just want to use this to say, okay, but this is just about doing processes that involve isotherms and adiabats by changing external parameters. But do we want to reduce the third law to just this setting? And more generally, how general would be the applicability of the third law? And how general would be the applicability of thermodynamics, if you want? Should also put restrictions on, you know, laser cooling, algorithmic cooling, dynamic cooling, things that have nothing to do with doing isotherms and adiabats. Okay. I just wanted to say that recently there has been people have analyzed some particular systems and some particular cooling models, and they have observed the third law in some papers. This in the recent years. Also, in some papers recently, they've been claimed that in some particular models that they analyzed, they observe a violation of the third law, and other papers have criticized those. So there is sort of a debate right now. Here I have all the references. my laptop. This is part of an effort that is being recently going about deriving thermodynamics from first principles and extending it to new regimes like nanoscale regime, quantum regime, and more. So this is also part of what I said before, of what is the definition of thermodynamics, what is its domain of applicability. And I like this definition of thermodynamics, that is, it says that it is just the study of the restrictions imposed by the reversibility of the microscopic dynamics and by some the restrictions imposed by some conservation laws like conservation of energy or particle number. Okay, so then according to this definition, it should apply to things that are more general than just isotherms and adiabats, just whatever that microscopically is reversible. Yes, so. Okay, so the setup that I'm going to consider is the system that I want to cool. Okay, this is my, I want to turn this water into ice, for example. I have a heat bath. Okay. And I have my work system. Okay. And this is the all what we are going to consider. This is where the dynamics globally on these three systems acts reversibly. And by consuming work and using the heat bath, we want to cool this system the lowest temperature possible and quantify the time that it takes. Okay, so we allow for any transformation in this tripartite system that is microscopically reversible, that preserves the energy. So, okay, I'm going to address this problem in the quantum setup. So this means that globally, the transformation has to be a unitary, and it has to commute with the global Hamiltonian of these three systems. And also, it has to commute with the translations on the weight. So the weight, is literally a suspended weight. So it's like the Hilbert space is like the position of one particle in one dimension, and the energy is just the position of the weight. Okay? And we impose that the global unitary commutes with the translation on the weight because we understand this, that it doesn't matter what is the origin of the energy. Okay? It should not matter where is the origin of the energy. Just the transformation just goes up or goes up down depending on the work that it is needed in for a transformation. And but more important than this is that when we impose that the global unitary commutes with the translations on the weight, then the reduced map on system and bath has always to be a mixture of unitaries. Okay? This map will in general depend on the state of the weight, but it will always be a mixture of unitaries. A mixture of unitaries is in some sense the second law of thermodynamics, because if a map is a mixture of unitaries, it will never decrease the entropy of system and bath. Okay? And this warranties that we are not using, that we are using the weight as a source of work and not as an entropy dump, for instance. Okay? Because depending on the state of the weight, we could put lots of entropy to the weight and cool the system for free, okay? And I want to emphasize that we are allowing, apart from these three restrictions, that is a unitary, that commutes with the Hamiltonian, and that commutes with the translations on the way, I emphasize that we allow for absolutely any unitary, okay? This, in particular, allows to address individual degrees of freedom of the bath. This is, of course, totally unrealistic, but what we want is to consider the most general setup, okay? The most general setup such that many real situations apply to the limitations that we are going to derive. Yes?
So, if you have indefinite position of the weight,
yes,
because of the unitary, then would that also put entropy to the system there?
Sorry?
If you have indefinite position of
yes,
the weight, then will you end up putting entropy on that system?
That can happen. That could happen, but yes, because the mixture of which mixture of unitaries depends on the state of the weight. I just want to say something related to this. If the state of the weight has a large amount of coherence, this is a setup that has been recently studied. If the initial state of the weight has coherence, this allows to implement a unitary, instead of a mixture of unitaries, just a unitary on system and bath that does not need to commute with the Hamiltonian of system and bath. Okay, so, but in general, it can put entropy on system and bath. What it cannot do is remove entropy, because, you know, a mixture of unitaries will never eliminate entropy from. Yes, so I was making emphasis on the how general this transformations we are allowing, but in the work that has been done to derive thermodynamics in this setup, I mean, you can see in particular that this does not allow to violate the second law. Suppose that you are able to find one unitary that satisfies the restrictions that we impose and that cools the system. That cools the system to some temperature. Now, how can we assess the time that it takes to implement this unitary? Okay, this resembles the type of problem that people consider in computational complexity. So lower bound, the time that it takes to implement some algorithm. And this is essentially, we can view this with this perspective. This is just a transformation that we want to implement. And in general, it's very hard to obtain lower bounds on the time that it takes to implement a transformation. But computer scientists have a very simple trick that, for instance, you can apply to the following setup. Consider a Turing machine that, it does what Turing machines do. And how long does it will take to implement a particular algorithm? Well, a standard trick is that the time that it will take, the number of steps, will be lower bounded by the amount of tape that it needs to write overall, by the amount of memory that it consumes this algorithm. So we have that time is lower bounded by space in this jargon. Okay, and we got inspired with this, and we actually can apply this to our setup, because it's clear that in a finite time, you cannot interact with an infinite bath. Okay? In a finite time, you will only be able to interact with a finite region of the bath. You can justify this, if you want, by Lib-Robinson bounds or by special relativity. So then we identify the volume or the effective volume of the bath as one of the resources that will be related to time. Okay? Also, later, we will see what happens is that when the bath has infinite volume, it has also infinite heat capacity. And you can show that in this case, perfect cooling is always possible. Okay? When the heat bath doesn't have infinite heat capacity, which is when the volume is finite, perfect cooling is also always possible, but a new phenomenon happens, which is that the fluctuations in the weight diverge. If you want to achieve perfect cooling, the fluctuations of the work that you consume diverge. And now I make a parenthesis. Okay, so in general, the work that is consumed on a system, well, there are different definitions of work. Some people impose that the work cannot fluctuate, the work that is consumed in a process. But here, we want to be maximally general. So in the same way that we allow for the most general unitary, we also allow the work to fluctuate in principle as much as you want. And in particular, in this way, you can simulate the processes in which the work does not fluctuate. So this is the more general thing. Okay, well, I continue with what I was saying. Okay. Thank you for your patience. Okay, so this is the setup that I described. These are the three constraints on the global unitary. Okay, so then, okay, so we see that if the volume is finite, perfect cooling can achieve in many cases, but at the expenses of having unbounded fluctuations of the work that is consumed. So then we thought, injecting work, if I want to, it seems that injecting an infinite amount of work into a system cannot be done in finite time. Okay, so it seems that the worst case fluctuation of the work consumed in the process should be also related to time. Okay. Sorry. So then we identify these two resources that we think they are related to time. So for any particular setup, physical setup, there will be two functions, monotonically increasing functions, that relate the effective volume of the bath with time and the worst case fluctuation of the work with the time. Okay. Also, in order to get nicer formulas, we will use the particular ones. Okay. That's the one that you obtain if you justify this by Lib-Robinson bounds. Yes, this is the linear size of the bath. Okay. And this is just the time that it would take for a causal wave to go from the extreme opposite of the bath to the system. Okay. And this, we make this linear just for simplicity. But if you don't like these two scalings, you can choose your favorite function that suits to your experimental setup. And as long as these functions f and g are monotonically increasing, you will have a third law or an attainability principle. OK, so now we go to the central part, which is the analysis of this optimal cooling procedure. And for this, something that plays a central role is the density of states of the bath. OK, so this, you take all the energy range of the bath, you divide it into energy windows, and omega just counts how many eigenvalues the Hamiltonian has in this energy window. Okay, the width of these energy windows can be optimized to some parameter, but in principle is arbitrary. And also we assume that the heat bath is in a Gibbs state with a whatever temperature. So the logarithm of the density of states is the microcanonical entropy. The second derivative of the entropy is beta over the heat capacity. This is the microcanonical heat capacity. But in the long volume limit, which is more or less what we are studying what happens for long times, so hence for long volumes, the microcanonical heat capacity and the heat capacity tend to the same value. And also, they tend to be proportional to the volume. Okay, so in many textbooks of statistical mechanics, you've seen that people take a system and a bath in a microcanonical state, and they say, okay, in the infinite volume limit, this is proportional to the volume. So the second derivative is zero, which implies that the density of states is exponential in the energy. Okay, and once the density of states is exponential in the energy, when system and bath are in a global microcanonical state, the system will be in a canonical state, in a Gibbs state. Okay, so this is a standard derivation that you have seen many times. But here, we will not do the typical approximation, which is taking this to be zero. We want to consider a finite a bath with a finite volume. So this is not zero. Also, in typical systems, the heat capacity is a positive number. You need to add energy into the system to increase the temperature. This implies that the second derivative is negative. Okay? Hence, for systems with finite volume, the density of states will be sub-exponential. Okay? So this is very important. Infinite volume, this is exponential. And finite volume, this is sub-exponential. And this will play a role in our setup.
Does finite volume mean finite number?
What means? OK. Finite volume means finite volume. It could still be a quantum field theory with finite volume. Sorry?
Where S is a discrete step function of E, unless you take some dynamic limit. So you can't, the derivative of S.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Exactly. So these functions, of course, the way I define them are not continuous or differentiable. So this is like the discrete derivative, the discrete second derivative. Okay. But still everything is still valid. Also, finite volume doesn't imply finite dimension of the Hilbert space. Okay. And actually there's been a lot of work in the third law and the unattainability principle showing that this is the case when the Hilbert space of the bath is finite. Okay. But here we are not assuming that. Actually, typically the heat bath can be radiation often, and this has infinite dimension, even if you just have a small box. Okay, so now this is the central part of what I want to explain, and this is the cooling process. For simplicity, instead of cooling, I'm going to consider what Landauer called erasure. Okay, so we have a qubit or a bit in a maximally mixed state. And we want to transform it into a pure state. So say all the probability into state 0 instead of 1. Okay? So this is the initial state of system and bath, and this is the final state of system and bath. So these are all the microstates of system and bath together. So these are all the microstates of bath when system is at 0, and all the microstates of bath when system is at 1. Every circle is a microstate, and this shady thing means that they never end. Okay? Or at least if the Hilbert space dimension is infinite, they never end. Now, every one of these points has some probability. The probability is the Gibbs probability, so it decreases exponentially. And it is the Gibbs probability times 1/2, because this is just the product probabilities for these two states. Okay. Now, what we would like is to put all this probability there, and none of the probability there. Of course, if the dimension is finite, if the number of little circles is finite, this is absolutely impossible, no? Because by reversibility, it will be just the transformation will be a permutation, and permutations do not allow this. But when the dimension is infinite, this can happen sometimes. Okay. So, and if it doesn't happen, what we want is to put the largest probabilities here, and here the smallest probability that we can. And our contribution is to lower bound the least amount of probability that you need to put there. Okay, this will be the error that we make into making our state pure. Okay. So I'll try to push the button more often. Okay. So if the density of states increases exponentially. What means exponentially? Means that by increasing the energy, okay, so by increasing the energy a fixed amount, I can double. So there exists a fixed amount. No matter what is the energy, I can increase the energy a fixed amount, and the density of states will double. Okay, this is essentially the definition of exponential. So no matter what states I consider, what is this energy that I consider, I can always choose a W max, which is how much energy we allow to put at most when we map from here to here. And it will always be possible to do the following. Okay. And if it's exponential or super exponential, not matter what E0 you choose, you will always be able, there will always exist a constant W max such that this map will be possible. Okay. So exponential growth that we associate with infinite bath, that we can associate with infinite time, perfect cooling is possible. Okay, now, what happens when it is sub-exponential? When it is sub-exponential, for small enough E0, we can do this, okay? But as we grow, there will be a point where we saturate this, and by just adding a fixed amount, yeah, we can put all this, but if E0 is larger, we won't be able to put all those here, okay? So there is let's define E0 as the maximum value of energy, such that by adding W max energy, I can fit all these and all these there, okay? Then what happens? Beyond E0, I will be able to put some of these states there, but some will have to be there. And I will choose those such that they have the smallest probability possible, because I want to minimize the probability here. Is this clear? So this is the essence of it, okay? This equation.
What did the left and right hand graphs submit? You said put some here or there? Or
yeah,
there.
Sorry, yeah. So this is, these two graphs represent all microstates of system and bath, okay? This is all states of the bath where system is at zero, and all states of the bath where system is at one. Initially you have, if you sum all these probabilities, this probability 1/2, probability 1/2, and you want to put all this probability there, such that at the end you have probability 1 and 0, okay? Or at least the least probability here. More questions? Okay, so to find this larger energy 0 is essentially to solve this question. What is I? I is the number of eigenvalues with energy below E, okay? You know, the sum of all the density of states, the integral of all the density of states, if you want, up to this point. And now we just have to show this. The solution of this equation is the maximal E0 for which we can do this map perfectly. And if it's sub-exponential, there is always a finite solution of this. And if it's exponential or faster, you can do this for all E0, or at least with an inequality. And this two comes from, because we want to map the two states of the system to one state of the bath. So there is a one and a two here. Okay. And once we find this number, E0, we can lower bound the amount of probability that we map to the wrong place by this quantity. Z is the partition function of the bath, density of states of the bath at E0 and this. So the larger is a zero, the smaller will be this number, okay? So we conclude that the also within sub-exponential densities of state, the faster it grows, the smaller is epsilon, okay? So baths with a faster density, with a faster growth of the density of states will allow us to have to make a smaller error when we cool a system or when we erase a system, okay? And in particular, if the density of states is exponential or grows faster, then we don't make any error at all. Okay. Yeah, here I just put the explicit dependence on the volume. Of course, the density of states depends on the volume. And you want to keep track of the two things that we are identifying as resources. So what we want to know is how epsilon scales as a function of these resources, volume, and worst case, fluctuation of the work invested. Okay, yeah, this is the simplest case. You can also solve the most general case, which is a system with arbitrary dimension, an arbitrary Hamiltonian, an arbitrary initial state, but the essence is absolutely the same. Then you get this, you solve this equation where you define this constant, lambda min and lambda max, are the minimum and maximum eigenvalues of the initial state. This is the largest energy of the Hamiltonian of the system, dimension of the system, ground state degeneracy of the system. Yeah, it's not relevant. The only thing that I want to say is that there is a tricky thing here because it depends on the smallest eigenvalue. So hence, this function is not continuous in the initial state of the system. But the correct thing to do would be, so you have your system, and these are all the eigenvalues, okay? Take here the smallest one, and they increase. So you would have to truncate. You can choose an arbitrary truncation where you change. And once you truncate, you renormalize the rest of the probability distribution that you keep. And then you redefine, of course, the state and its eigenvalues. You redefine the global dimension. You may redefine the largest energy of the Hamiltonian, and you may redefine the largest the ground state degeneracy. Okay, and yeah, this this chopping will make epsilon. So what we want is to maximize this to get a less trivial bound. Okay. So this truncation will keep increasing, and there is a maximum. At some point, it starts decreasing because that you can see this easily. Because if you chop until you just get a one-dimensional state, then it is already pure. Okay. If you get a state in a one-dimensional Hilbert space. Okay. So yeah, it's just that I wanted to stress this fact of the truncation. And this method of truncation allows to extend this result to systems with infinite dimension as well, okay? Just by choosing the optimal truncation. Yeah, maybe traditionally the third law is associated with the temperature and not the error of the temperature that you achieve, instead of the error that you make when you try to put all the probability into the ground space, okay? So, but you can translate the previous results to temperature. So delta S would be the gap, the energy gap above the ground state of the system. T S prime would be the final temperature of the system. And here also we have made the approximation to simplify the formulas that the initial state of the system has the, is a Gibbs state and has the same temperature than the bath. Okay. Okay. And here, yeah. So you have, and okay. So if the density of states is sub-exponential, there will be always a solution which is finite. Solution of the above equation, which is finite. So we will have a non-trivial bound. Okay. And now you can relate these two resources to time in this way or in your favorite way. And yeah, so this looks like a derivation of the unattainability principle. However, what we have found in this work is that it heavily depends on the density of states of the bath. Okay. So it's a bit, everything is implicit in this function I, okay? Which makes not a very handy formula to use. One thing that we have done is to say, okay, let's look around and see what is the reasonable bath that has a faster density of states, density of state that grows faster. And this is radiation, like massless bosons, okay? So what happens if we solve this problem where everything is implicit for the particular case of radiation, a box of radiation, a three-dimensional box of radiation with a volume V has this density of states. I'm simplifying a bit the formula, but not the formula, the constants, but it's this. And then you can solve the problem. You can solve the first equation and find E0 and substitute everything. And then you obtain this more simple formula where everything are constants except for W and V, which, let me recall you, are the ways that we relate these two resources to time, okay? The constant that have these relations. Okay, if you wonder about the number 7, this gets explained if you solve the problem in arbitrary dimensions. In arbitrary dimensions, the density of states of a box of radiation will have slightly different powers in the exponent. It won't be three-fourths for the energy. And also here, yeah, this one-third power, this is the linear dimension in three spatial dimensions. If not, it will be 1 over the dimension of space. No? If you do this for arbitrary dimension, you get this scaling with time. And clearly, for dimension 3, you get the 7. Yeah, so somehow it's unfortunate that one has to leave this formula up to these two quantities that will depend on your particular physical setup. But yeah, you know, I mean, the way we thought is like in computational complexity theory, where what people are interested in the scaling of things, okay? Well, probably they're also interested in constants, but scaling is also interesting. And this is what we have done here. So let me conclude. I have presented a method to introduce time in thermodynamics. Okay, this has been already done in the past, but for particular processes, namely processes that time was imposed through situations in which heat was being conducted. Okay, and then you know there was a parameter where the speed at which heat could flow was limited. But there has not been a way to introduce time in thermodynamics that works in general for absolutely any process. Okay, and here, this is one possible way to do this by identifying the resources, volume of the bath, and worst case fluctuation of the work. Okay, we have used this for the particular transformation of cooling, but of course you can apply this to any process. Okay. As I said, the faster something that I want to remark is that this the fast that we can cool a system depends on the density of states of the bath. This is the central part. The faster it grows, the lower the final temperature we can achieve. If it's exponential or faster, it grows. The final temperature that we can achieve is perfect, absolute zero. Yeah. Also, when the growth is super exponential, this amounts to have a negative heat capacity. Okay. In some context, people have said that, in some sense, black holes have violated the third law. Okay. I don't know if this is related, but maybe black holes have negative heat capacity. So then, in this sense, it may be related with this. Okay. Because this says that also systems with negative heat capacity would allow to violate the third law. If you consider the heat bath with faster growth of entropy, that usually is around of us, radiation, then the formula that we get is this one. I also want to mention something else, which is that, in some sense, for instance, in the setup of Landau erasure, when we want to transform a qubit that initially is in the maximally mixed state to a pure state, so the temperature is not really a very good parameter. And you can see that the error that you make essentially scales, goes to zero exponentially fast with time. Okay, this is pretty fast. So in some sense, you could argue that there is no third law, okay? Because this is going to be pretty soon indistinguishable from a pure state. But yeah, since you want to be interested, since this follows from somehow first principles, it still tells you something interesting, the how fast you can get to this. So if your conclusion is that, okay, if you tell me this, then there is no third law, that's also fine. But then what we have analyzed is how fast this goes to zero. Okay. So thank you very much. That's all.
Have you looked at maybe the related area of like work extraction and power rates and trying to place?
We are doing this at the moment. Yeah, well, as I told you, you can get any function that relates volume to time, okay? As long as it's monotonic, you will have an attainability result. The faster it goes, maybe the most trivial will be the bound. But I don't know, if you have a way to estimate in this type of system how fast you can do a full interaction with this system, then you can, or lower bound this, then you can get an attainability principle in some sense.
Again.
Thank you.